Silks and satins in latest Paris style. All the blues you'll be getting, you'll be forgetting. There'll be no fretting, nothing but smiles, honey. Come along with me. There's the place. Don't be a fool. Come along, come along. There's the boat that's leaving soon for New York. Come along with me. That's where we belong. Yes, sister, that's where we belong. Yes, sister, sister, I be those men to be those dead. Papa don't need those babies, those. Whoa, papa, those, sa, sa.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for the next hour, our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal.
WHFR, the station making waves, is proud to bring you a special benefit concert on Saturday, June 28th, featuring Brian Vander Ark.
This mobile home has never been the last time it moved, I don't know when.
With special guests, Ellery. Join us at the Arab American Museum on Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn for the one-time Verve Pipe leader, Brian Vander Ark, playing solo and acoustic songs from his entire career.
For the life of me, I cannot believe we'd ever die for these sins. We were merely freshmen.
And the acclaimed duo Ellery, fresh off their recent top five placement in Pace Magazine's Rock and Reel at Sea contest. June 28th at the Arab American Museum, Brian Vander Ark and Ellery in concert to benefit 89.3 WHFR.FM. Tickets for this benefit show are $15 at the door or $12 in advance. Visit www.whfr.fm for details.
That's only 1 week from tomorrow. A great folk duo, two people, two artists, one a duo and one a solo. So we hope you can be there. It's a special benefit for WHFR.FM. We're making waves. Now let's get the theme going for this public affairs show. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm your host for this hour today, and today is, for me at least, it may not be if you're listening to our podcast at WHFR.FM, but for me it's May the 20th, 2008, and I'm joined in the studio today by our WHFR co-host, Ned Apigian. Hi, Ned. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Well, yes. Right. Depends on what time you got up.
That's right. If they're not listening to us on the computer.
You've been out there busy this week?
Nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay. Well, we have so much to talk about here, so we will proceed with the news of this week. And there are a couple of things from the Dearborn Heights area, and apparently you didn't hear about this one, Ned, but you were actually at one of the recent Dearborn Heights council meetings, apparently.
Right.
This has been resolved, folks, and maybe you caught it on the national news, that is Fox, perhaps, or MSNBC, or headline CNN, that because the city of Dearborn Heights got in on the national TV news because they were considering silencing all traveling vendors, such as ice cream trucks, that they couldn't make any music or other sounds to let people know that they were coming down the street. And, of course, this did seem to a lot of people maybe to be hampering a tradition, a cherished American tradition of ice cream trucks with carnival type music or bells or other sounds. And the conclusion is, to make a long story short here, apparently it was talked about on the syndicated talk show Live with Regis and Kelly.
Really?
So that's a lot of claim to fame right there.
Well, if anybody wants to follow this, it's in the Times Herald the Wednesday, June 18th.
And also last Sunday,
page.
Too. Yeah. So anyway, they came up with a compromise, and here it's stated, the ordinance previously prohibited, quote, hucksters, street vendors, or peddlers from making any kind of noise that could be considered a nuisance, and the amendment that they've passed now allows them to use a bell or a device with multiple bells on it, provided the device doesn't use electronic amplification. So I just know, Ned, that somebody is going to be coming up with like 40 or 50 mechanical bells on top of their truck that all ring at the same time.
The most interesting thing about this, that it had national coverage, mm-hmm. as you've indicated. And anything that has national coverage and has to do with Dearborn Heights, our local community, of course, you would got to say something about it.
Well, I have to, yes.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I happened to go to the meeting of which the end of this discussion was talked about,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I was not aware of it, and there were many people in the audience that got up and said, aren't there more important things for this council to think about than that?
Right. There was a comment in the paper here from several people that were indicating that there's many other concerns, and some people, some residents here, it says that the council's time could have been better spent addressing other concerns, such as the enforcement of existing ordinances, whether it's about noise or trash or other things too, is that there's other issues much more important, although this is what got the national attention. And Dearborn Heights is not the only city, apparently nationally, to have ordinances about so-called traveling vendors and noise levels and so on, but there's not many others. And I guess it was a slow news weekend, and
it's grown into the question of whether ice cream vendors need to be licensed.
This is perhaps the end of this article.
Gone into a more interesting, important issue.
Well, we were talking before the show, and you know, my assumption and your assessment too, as yours with city government, is that somebody selling food, whether it's from a truck or maybe a hot dog stand somewhere, would have to get a food handler's permit from someone probably in Wayne County Health Department.
It's the Wayne County Health Department.
Yeah, right. But here it seems that that the city is considering also, the city of Dearborn Heights is looking into some special license in order to drive up and down their streets and do this, and that's not in place. They do print the complete ice cream amendment in the Sunday, June 15th press and guide. So those that want to read this. Again, there's a technical terms here that I wasn't aware of, that that a huckster and a street vendor or a peddler are different definitions, that there's actually different legal definitions. And a huckster sounds like a negative term.
Right.
But I guess it's somebody
that... At least to me, maybe it isn't.
There must be a difference, or they wouldn't put them all in the same ordinance. It does describe, I don't know the definition about what would be different between them, but huckster obviously is trying to sell a product, and they're making a pitch out loud, you know, like giving a loud speech or over a microphone or something.
Instead of knocking on doors, he's saying, we're doing roofs special.
A street vendor would have their either truck or like a hot dog cart sitting somewhere. So they don't proclaim themselves. They're just sitting there. You can go up to them or go up to the truck. And a peddler might be going door to door, you know, and knocking on your door and saying, I'm... In the 1950s, when I grew up in Detroit, a peddler might be, I know a man came, and my mother was very happy. He came with his little cart, and he would sharpen knives.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Sharpening knives and scissors.
Like once a year, and I remember as my mother used to say, oh, okay, here he comes, stop him, I need some knives sharpened. And I would go out and talk to the man. The one I remember, of course, it could be
Is he a peddler or a huckster?
Well, right, or a street vendor. But he would come to the door and say, do you have any knives to be sharpened? And I have my cart here. You know, we had a grinding wheel on his cart. And I said, just a minute, my mother's getting her knives that she needs sharpened. He said, I got plenty of time and no money. So, I mean, I don't do Italian accents, but a very nice man. And he used to come by in Detroit every year. And my mother would always, of course, you want to have a sharp knife if you're cooking at home a lot, you know, as many people have to do now. And it was just, and he didn't charge any money. And so it was really cool. I remember there also used to be in Detroit people that would come selling, get this one in summer, watermelons out of the back of trucks.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if... I think the issue is they would have to knock on your door. If they're driving down the street with a truck full of watermelons,
well,
making an announcement,
if they're going slowly enough, the whole neighborhood would remember these things too. And well, here we have our another gentleman of a certain age. Let me ask him.
Does he Bill, remember the watermelon
from the Big
show?
Band show? What do you remember with peddlers or street vendors as you were growing up? People coming to sharpen knives, knocking on doors, people selling encyclopedias or vacuum cleaners at all? Or what about the watermelon
Fuller Brush
trucks?
Man, I remember the
Fuller Brush or
and he still comes to my neighborhood now.
Or Amway or something. Do you remember any like that?
When I was growing up, I grew up in a little town. In East Tennessee at that point in time, and we had the Fuller Brush guy.
Okay, you did have
Fuller Brush. We had the guy, I want to say it was like a Johnson's Candy, but it wasn't. It may have been Fuller Brush came in, bring in a tray, all kinds of goodies on it. Right now, it's like Schwann's, I guess, would be a comparative in this day and age. The milk was delivered to the house.
Well, that's because they subscribe to that. Yeah,
right, And then the guy with a vegetable stand would come down on his truck. You go out in the back of his truck. My mom would buy watermelons, vegetables, whatever she needed. the grinder guy would come by ringing his bell. You'd take your scissors or whatever, your knives, well, and all of that stuff. Yeah, I do.
No carnival music, though.
No carnival music.
And, of course, the ice cream trucks.
Always.
And they had usually bells, right? Little mechanical bells?
Yeah, like the Good Humor truck with the ringing of the bells when he came down. Yeah.
That's all that Dearborn Heights now is going to allow. They have forbidden any electronic amplification. And they got on the national news, even on Regis and Kelly's show, apparently, because, their initial proposal was to ban all sound from street vendors, you know, but
there was a guy that ran for city council quite often, came down the street with a bright green truck, played all kinds of loud music.
City council candidate, yeah. Well, Ned, that wasn't you, Ned, right?
No.
Okay, that's, we cleared that one up anyway, folks.
I think candidates, that's another thing. That's happened, too.
Yeah.
They've driven up down.
If there's a noise pollution problem, I mean, Dearborn has ordinances about that, either boom boxes or whatever, and so the police just have to go and enforce them. But to have this as an upfront rule was something unusual. But they're past it now. They did an amendment, and you can have bells. And I made a joke that it has to be mechanical. Somebody's going to put like 40 or 50 mechanical bells or some monster bell 3 feet across on top of their truck, and then they're in trouble. So I think they ought to have had some sort of a decibel standard if they got to pass a law and the cops have to enforce it, at a certain point somebody's going to have a monster bell up there.
I didn't have a problem with the ice cream truck coming down playing the song.
It was a choice of songs for young kids in the summer. It was exciting for us to have these people come by, and they weren't hurting anybody, and they probably didn't even need a license in those days. But
the whole issue, and I was at the meeting, has to do with enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened at the meeting, we got into other issues of enforcement, which was the reason I went to the meeting. I didn't know about this issue. Who is going to enforce this?
The police have to, of course, if anybody calls them. And it's probably only if they get called, because they're not going to drive up and down the streets themselves.
They expect the residents to
be the
enforcement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately, though, if somebody needs a ticket there or... for illegal behavior, the police would have to come and do that. But yeah, the residents would have to be the ones that will notify the police, obviously. So not a big issue. We just mention it because times have changed, and you know, some people are concerned. But yeah, you know, I do think that you can't have laws regulating everything. Ultimately, there's always a problem of enforcement. If a law cannot be enforced,
they have two enforcement officers.
Then what good is having the law, you know?
Right. In Dearborn Heights, they have two full-time enforcement officers.
Oh, really? For these kinds of regulations?
Well, all the enforcement. And then there's two part-time. I think Dearborn must have 20.
Okay. So these are things other than, like, crimes that the police would be involved
in. It's not a matter of crimes. For example,
these are ordinance officers.
Okay.
For example, you cannot bring your trash out before 6 o'clock your trash day.
I think it's 5 on Dearborn the night
before.
Well,
whatever it is, is violated constantly.
Well, yeah.
So what do you do about it? You can't issue a ticket.
Well, if they're off by a few minutes, who should care?
That's not what's going on. What's going on? They put it out on the Sunday because they were cleaning the yard. It's there for 4 days.
Let me move to what issue were you at the council for? Since we have our expert right here, what did you speak about at the council?
The reason that I went was I understand that the city of Dearborn Heights, at much of my urging, their new ordinance and master plan have adopted a tree ordinance, which I haven't studied. I only was aware that they did. And I told them that I shudder every time I hear those saws go off in my neighborhood. There's a tendency to denude the trees. And I offered a suggestion. I don't know what the requirements of your ordinance is, whether if it's on your property and a tree is not dead, you can cut it down. If it's in the way, then you have to replace. I don't know what they've done. But I told them that a private person can hire a tree cutting company and they'll have a tree down in the street right away, which is a city tree, before you'll know anything that's happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the cure to the problem is to those contractors that are licensed to work in the city, must be informed that if you cut a tree down in the street right away, that's going to cost you $5,000. Now, that guy's not going to cut a tree down in the street right away before he gets a permit and finds out whether he can do it.
Well, yeah.
And my point was, what assurances do we have, whatever your ordinance is, what is the enforcement mechanism?
Right.
If you're expecting me, as a private citizen, to call you to say, I heard the saw, by the time I'm off the phone, they got the tree down.
Yeah.
So my suggestion was that you need to work through the contractor so that they will not cut without a permit. And secondly, the other issue was, since I live along the park, Hines Park and Riverside Drive and Military Hills, some people think that they could take their lawn trash and just put it in the park, line it along where the trees begin and the grass.
Oh, really? Oh.
And I stopped the guy once and him cutting him doing that, and I said, who on earth do you think is going to remove this pile of leaves that you've put here? Do you think God is going to come here and remove it? Mm. And I said, I'm just warning you that this is what's going on. Everybody's going to think it's a junk place where you put your debris.
We can't say God. It's the intelligent designer.
Oh, well, anyway. That's what I told the guy.
Yeah. Do you think the intelligent designer is going to come down here and do that? Yeah.
So the point was,
right,
this is a county issue.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You need to be aware that people are doing that. So what's the solution? The solution is write a letter to neighborhoods that are confronted with edge of a parkland that you think you could take your leaves there, and inform them if they do such a thing and they're caught, that there is a fine associated with it.
Now, we can let Ned make these comments on this show, by the way, and his opinion and mine and even Bill's are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, but he is not currently running for office, so this is not a paid political endorsement right now, or an unpaid endorsement for his candidacy. But if any of you want to become one of our co-hosts on this show in the community, you have to pass some rigorous standards, and I'm not kidding here. You have to have some sense of being open-minded and tactful, and both my current co-host, Ned, and Susan Morrell are those kinds of people. But need your help in filling in the gaps here. Whenever Ned is a co-host, at least he stays involved, as a good citizen should, with what's happening at their local city government and in their community. And if you don't give that feedback, whether it's enforcement or suggestions for improvement to your elected representatives, they might do all kinds of crazy things, because what do they know? You know, they're not the full community, and you got to give them the information so that they can make good decisions for you.
They could stop the good humor, man.
Yeah, that, and then we wouldn't have any more good humor in the society, so or other kinds of ice cream. Okay, the other article I wanted to touch on from the Dearborn Press and Guide
is the
fact that the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, who have been under contract with the city of Dearborn, actually running the animal shelter in Dearborn for all the stray pets and animals that have to be picked up and taken care of and found new homes or given health treatment and so on. They have finally convinced the Dearborn City Council, and I don't know why it's taken so many years, to authorize the city treasurer, and this was passed at the June 2nd meeting.
Oh,
a
I was
going to
ask what date was
it? Yeah,
there?
June 2nd it was passed.
Is it in the Wednesday?
No, it's in the Sunday press and guide.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
here.
Sir.
Right. Unanimously, the city council approved authorizing the city treasurer finance director to establish a capital improvement project in the city's general capital improvement fund. So they have like their own little account number probably now, and that's going to aid the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter in its fundraising efforts for a new home for the animals that are now currently housed at the shelter on Greenfield Road,
right,
just south of the I-94 overpass, and to appropriate, and this is the other great part, they're authorized to appropriate a contribution from the city of between $600,000 and $1 million from the city's general fund to the project.
Yeah, my understanding was the animal shelter was not a municipal thing. It was a private
Well, the
nonprofit people make donations.
The city needs to have an animal shelter. And, of course, if the city was running it, they could take contributions, too, because the city itself is a nonprofit, and people could contribute money to help the city run it. But the city hadn't been running it too well. There were all kinds of problems, and they weren't getting many contributions. So a private group...
So it is as I thought.
Yeah, was formed by, and this is my understanding of the story, and I may be exaggerating or underestimating it, but a private group of a lot of staff at the Ford Motor Company, mostly women, mostly secretarial types, although maybe some were executive secretaries.
Animal lovers, for sure.
Yeah, that they decide, what can we do for the Dearborn community? And they formed this group, and it's now many, many different kinds of members. I'm a member of the group, regular contributor, too. And they made a proposal. They said, look, you delegate to us the operation of this building and the maintenance of the building and the veterinarians and everything, and we'll do it. But you contract with us.
So it's, and in city, fact, it's on city land. Where
right.
The DPW,
it's on city land. The city owns the building right now.
Oh, they didn't build the building.
No,
the
no.
City
no. The building was there, but it needed a lot of care and upgrades, and the animals were suffering, and a lot of them were being euthanized every year because there was no way to find homes for them and so on. And my understanding is that this private group is running under the contract from the city. The city pays this group less than what they had to pay previously to run it themselves. But the group has been fundraising almost constantly every year to improve the facilities, and they've improved them just about as far as they can go. And still, we have unwanted animals and
Susan
pets
hosted them
out of
on
control.
Her show.
That's right. The Pet Lovers Lane show that we do on the second Saturday of every month from 10 to 11. Ned's show is the fourth Saturday of every month, by the way, then and now. Intellectual history on a wide variety of topics, by the way, folks. And that will be coming up the fourth Saturday of this month. But Pet Lovers Lane has covered and has talked to Elaine Green and
right,
others at the shelter several times. And we knew that this was proposed, but finally this is a major step to making it happen. You know, as various religious leaders have said, mostly Buddhists, but if we can't learn to treat the animals and the plant life of this planet in a respectful, humane way, then how can we ever learn to be nice to one another, even? I mean, is it easier, perhaps, to, you know, stop the killing of plants and animals and the, you know, the polluting of our planet and our environment? Shouldn't that be easier to learn how to do first as a first step, and then we can move to stop killing each other unnecessarily and being violent to one another?
Well, we have laws against cruelty to animals. I don't know
we do.
About cruelty to plants.
Well, and we have laws against cruelty to people. But
yes.
Again, we need to follow through and actually learn this behavior. And I think the environmental movement is talking about the same sort of justice for the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the plants on this earth, as well as, of course, the animals and domesticated animals that are a central part of our society. Many people love their dogs, their cats, and their other pets. They're part of the family in many cases in that same sort of wonderful way. Well, and yet we have unwanted pets all over the place, people dropping them off, people dropping them on street corners, and we need the shelter to help find them new homes. The Dearborn Animal Shelter has done a wonderful job. I proclaim their efforts and applaud their efforts here, let's applaud Ned here, right?
Not only that, we should tell them where the proposed place is going
okay.
to be. It's
well,
not
right.
in its present location.
Well, as some people may know if they follow the show, the city of Dearborn has already said they can have land that is behind the police station and the little bit over and away from the train station and the public library on Michigan Avenue near Greenfield. They could have an area back there, but I didn't think it looked like a very large area. But the city has said they could have it if they wanted to build a new building. The article here does say, Elaine Green says, that our first choice would be to find a building and to fix it up to meet our needs. And she says if that doesn't happen, we'll build. Because that would be cheaper, probably, than having to build from the ground up. It looks like, how much money do they need? About $4 million. And that's if they build it from the ground up. And she thinks if a site is found within the city that they can renovate, the rehabilitation prices would be only about $3.5 million. And so it's extremely necessary. They haven't had to euthanize or, in other words, kill an unwanted animal, I think, for more than 2 years now. They've been so good at finding people to adopt on a temporary basis, adopt animals, and act as a rescue. For example, the shelter itself really can't handle more than just dogs and cats. And there's many other kinds of pets. There's, believe it or not, monkeys and ferrets and all kinds of pets, and they don't have the facilities that they can care equally.
There's only about 12 or 15 stalls. I went there to visit it.
Well, but they're doing a pretty good job. The cats are the biggest overpopulation issue in the shelter. No, they don't believe in putting too many animals too close by. That makes them crazy, just like people, you know, shoved into small areas like our Jackson prison, for example. And you can't control populations or prevent disease in populations that are so squeezed together. And so the group itself is saving the city money, and they have for years, folks. So if you get the chance to donate, they're organizing a campaign to actually take money now. They couldn't do that before because they didn't have a basic account within the city to put the money into that would make it truly nonprofit. And they needed, of course, the city's promised donation, too. I don't know if it's matching funds or not. I didn't read that, but I hope not. So we still have about another $3 million to go, in other words. Well, but now they have the time and the account set up, and they hope they can break ground, raise the money and break ground by 2010. That's only 2 years away. So get your checkbooks out, people, and consider a contribution that will go to the purpose of the new Dearborn Animal Shelter run by this wonderful nonprofit group. Most of the people working with the animal shelter are volunteers, just like yourself here at WHFR, Ned. Mm. No money, but they're doing the work. And even the veterinarians in that donate most of their cost of their services to keep the animals healthy. So it's a wonderful, wonderful volunteer nonprofit organization. It's proved itself over the last dozen or so years, and I think it's been going for at least 10 years anyway. And we need to help support them for what we really need to properly house our animals. And maybe it's a first step towards justice for the environment and for human beings, too, if we can get this right. Maybe it's a test case for us. Let's see what we can do. Moving on, other things that have been happening in the area, and I think now about halfway through, I want to just take a break and play
Station
some
ID.
Yes, some. Well, we are WHFR Dearborn, folks, and we are the station making waves, WHFR.FM. Take a listen to some of these non-commercial announcements here. Let's see if I can pick a couple good ones.
A real good one.
Well, one or two anyway. Huh, this is interesting. Let's take a listen now, and Ned and I will be back with more of the new WHFR Journal Making Waves in just a moment.
Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer: a credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Henry Ford Community College summer session classes begin Tuesday, June 24th. Fall semester classes begin Thursday, August 21st. Be sure to call 1-800-585-HFCC. For registration information, or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.
The United States Department of Education has a new program to bring some of the nation's outstanding public school teachers to Washington, D.C. Teachers will be there for a year and have a chance to learn about and shape national education policy. For information, visit www.ed.gov and click on Teaching Ambassador Fellowship or call 1-800-USA-LEARN.
be stupid with your skin. It's the only skin you're in. Know what's good and bad to do. Find the right and wrong for you. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. UV lamps from a tanning bed, they can turn your skin beet red. Wrinkles come from the UV light, and age spots make you a frightful sight. With UV light, it gets worse. Skin cancer is a wicked curse. Don't be the one that's tan and dead. Use your brain, use your head. It's time you learn what it's about. 'Cause indoor tanning is out. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Yes, watch out for your skin out there in the summertime. No more than about 20 minutes or a half an hour of direct exposure, folks. And best not to do it around 12 to 1 o'clock. It's better, for example, on Fridays to be indoors listening to the new WHFR Journal from 1 to 2 p.m. Ned Apigian and myself, Jay Koronek, are here with you today covering local Dearborn news and just also adding this little live read, as we call it in the radio business. I'm alive and I'm reading. The one-act play festival at HFCC is in its second week. Two different one-act plays than last weekend. And there's only tonight, Friday night. Wait a minute. No, it's... What is the date today? It's the 20th. Okay.
Today's the 20th.
It is the first weekend starting this weekend. And the second weekend is next weekend. So tonight... And tomorrow night and Sunday, tonight and tomorrow night at 8 and Sunday at 2, they play Impromptu and the one-act play The Vice, both of them, dynamic duo. Great authors and perform by our theater department. So we want you to try to get there tonight and tomorrow night and Sunday at 2 for the first weekend of our one-act play festival. The second weekend, two different plays. You want to come back again next weekend, too. The 26th through the 29th, that's right, it does start Thursday night at 8 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, Saturday also at 8 and Sunday at 2. Red Carnations by Glenn Hughes and Miss Julie, famous play by August Strindberg. Both of those will be next weekend. So this weekend, Impromptu and The Vice. And next weekend, Red Carnations and Miss Julie. So please come by Henry Ford Community College, Adrie Auditorium, One Act Festival, 2008. All seats $5. You can call 313-845-9817. That's 313-845-9817 if you want to reserve
time,
a seat. Thursdays through Saturdays, 8 p.m. Sundays.
8 p.m.
Right. Sundays at 2 p.m. only. Doors open about half an hour ahead. So consider that. Those are great classic plays performed by our students who are in the theater program here, not just Johnny Come Latelys. We interviewed them on this show last Friday, the student directors, and all of them have background either from high school or several years of experience here with the theater program. So we're going to have some great, great performances, one-act plays, both together go, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, 2 hours, 10, depending on which weekend it is. So we wanted to make a comment or two and feature part of Frank Bewick's column in the Times Herald, the Sunday Times from last Sunday. So,
June 15th.
Yeah, take away we always hear the numbers, the polling about presidential candidates and who's in favor of what. And this is always good to keep in mind as a educated voter, I think. And it's good for Frank to bring it up, even though it's a touchy subject.
Well, touchy subjects need to be talked about. Mm-hmm. His article is half has to do with Hillary releasing her superdelegates and why she isn't. And his guess is because she's waiting to the last minute. You never know what will happen.
And, of course, that's over and done with because,
right.
Barack already has enough delegates. And so whether or not she releases hers officially, she doesn't have enough now.
Yeah. I just pointed it out because that this article was part of that.
Right. And
so
you're,
part two has to do with the issue we're talking about, where he says, now let's talk about this November election. In all of the surveys and polls that will be taken by each party, I honestly believe that none of the surveys can be taken seriously from this day forward. Let's face it, race wormed its way into the primaries, but funny thing is that it was introduced and played by the Democrats. That was the first time it was mentioned, and every time thereafter, and there have been several, it was mentioned by Democrats. Oh, they claim their skirts are lily white, no pun intended, but I've not heard one peep out of the Republicans, at least not one, in a position to influence the direction of Senator John McCain's campaign, not even a friendly discussion. But I think that we all know, or at least should know, that there is still racism in this country. That's not new, of course. That's me talking. Mm-hmm. It can be found in the bars or in conversation among friends. Some even are open and not ashamed of their feelings. In fact, they are proud of their feelings. African Americans have come a long way in society in the past 40 or 50 years. I just want to jump ahead. In his opinion, racism has subdued a great deal in these past few years, but certainly hasn't gone away. I don't want to continue with it, Jay.
Well, his point is, at the end, he comes back to it. Sure, he goes over the history, and he mentions you know, the careers of General Colin Powell and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and they've been either victims or helped by, you know, bringing up the issues of race, actually, in one
way
or the other.
Ways.
It does go both ways. But he concludes, he says, first of all, in terms of polling, he feels that the true racist will not want to shout his or her feelings to a pollster or surveyor, so that they will either lie about their choice or avoid the question completely. I know a lot of people, Ned, that actually vote according to the polls. Everybody's voting for so-and-so, so I'm going to vote for it. No, that's the pollsters telling you that. And these numbers can be skewed by some of these underlying or hidden issues. And some of them are irrational. Even if people are not lying to the pollsters, as political scientists would tell you, when people go into the voting booth, they usually vote not according to rational reasons. That the emotional issues kick back in as they're pulling down the levers or punching the holes or whatever they're doing in their polling booth. So, in fact, a book that I'm reading right now by a political scientist, again, sums it up. It's the myth of the rational voter. Voters are not rational. So the reason that the polls are off are not because people are necessarily lying to the pollsters, but because some of these underlying issues, like race and racism,
look what happened to the exit
come
polls
back to the surface to, you know, move your hand to vote for or against someone. And if we can talk about this like we're doing on this show in this presentation here, and as Frank is doing in his column, and
absolutely,
good for you, Frank, we should be trying to be rational, I think, with our voting and not emotional. We should vote for the candidate who can who's supporting the issues that we believe and the answers that we believe are necessary in our society, and we should try to put aside issues that don't have any substance, and that is the color of a person's skin. Okay, it's hard to do, but if you can talk about it and think about it in the open, then maybe you will not be that irrational voter like most people finally are. But don't believe the pollsters either. Say, well, I'm going to vote for him because most people aren't, or most people are. Especially with either a woman or an African-American candidate, the pollsters are not going to be as accurate about actual voting behavior as they normally would be if it was just a bunch of old white guys, pardon the expression.
Well, if Obama carries the Confederacy states, you'll know something strange. Any one of them, you'll know something strange has developed in America. Some progress has been made, you know, maybe mm-hmm. in Virginia. That's going to be the clue.
Yeah, certainly, as when I took political science in college, we knew that there is no political science until after
the election.
Then you can do analysis and you can be rational. But boy, coming up to it, you can't really see what will happen until everybody does complete voting. And, of course, I keep saying everybody that actually votes. If you're not registered to vote yet, folks, or if any of you listening know people that are not registered to vote, They need to be registered to vote, remember, at least a month before any election.
30 days.
30 days ahead. And there is a primary in Michigan in many areas, I think maybe in every area, that's coming up in August. Now, not a presidential primary, but primary for some local offices.
Right.
So that means, guess what, folks? If it's that means early July, coming up in just a couple of weeks. If you're not registered to vote by early July, you won't be able to vote in the August primary. And then, of course, for November, the big election, once every 4 years, first Tuesday in November.
After the first Monday.
Yeah. So by the first Monday in the month before, which is October, you need to be registered to vote or you can't vote there. So young people, old people, if you're not registered to vote, we need your educated and somewhat rational vote to make this, to continue this democracy. Okay?
Well, I know from personal experience, friends of mine that I would think are liberal and open-minded that would normally be voting Democratic have, you know, said, I'm not voting for a black guy.
I know.
And I can't believe it from the people I've heard it from, or they would come to me and say things like that. And it's the who has said it that really shocked me.
And of course, it is America. If you want to vote for emotional reasons and nothing that is rational, you have a right to do that. I merely suggest that you might want to look a little deeper than your emotions to see if there is any actual factual reasons why that emotion is valid. I suggest humbly that there aren't any rational reasons why it's valid. Okay.
But
and our phone is lighting up here. I must have said something, but we can't answer it until after we're off the air, folks.
Well,
I wanted to move to an area that I hope there's no racism, because it's a wonderful thing. First of all, in Dearborn Heights, they had a Spirit Fest last weekend. Ned, you didn't get out there, I bet.
Actually, the weather was so bad, but looking in the paper, we see that it turned out okay.
They made money.
They said they make money. And
people showed up in between the storms. They always have a big carnival in that, and there's going to be several in different areas, folks. It has been covered in the papers this last week, and we don't have time for that. But this weekend, always one of the biggest festivals in the area and really special because it is the Arab International Festival, 13th annual, and it starts today, June 20th at 5 p.m., goes to 11 p.m. tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, noon to 11, and Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. And we'd like to just give you a little background about what's happening. It's a big, big list of events, and the area is Warren. And you have the
Schaefer and Warren are pretty much all the way to Wyoming, or no, Miller Road, isn't it?
Right. Where is the little? You got the supplement there that's got the times.
You're right.
Tell us about some of the entertainment, like today, anyway.
The Friday, June 20th, today from 5:30 to 6, South End Drummers on the stage. 6:30 to 7, the Chaldean female singer. 7 to 7:30, Imad Bataya. 7:30 to 8:15, ribbon cutting ceremony. Mm-hmm. 8:15 to 8:45, Mahmoud Baidoun. 9 to 9:15, DJ Refugee opening for Carl Wolf.
Okay.
And then 9:15 to 10, Carl Wolf. Who Carl Wolf is, I don't know, and what he has to do with the Arab American Festival is beyond.
It is a multicultural thing, but you must have some connection to the Arab culture, or they wouldn't be invited in.
So that's the Friday schedule.
A lot of acts tonight.
Bore you with Saturday.
Well, the weather forecast looks like it's going to be great. And remember, there you can find it again. It's on Warren Avenue, east of east of Greenfield, and it's probably near Warren and Schaefer, especially.
Usually it begins at Schaefer. They cut Warren off.
Sometimes at there's, and you might look through that brochure, sometimes there's little buses or trolleys from other areas that people can park their cars and be bused in there. Besides the musical acts, there's a giant old fashioned Ferris wheel that you can see from all over Dearborn, 30 international food booths, coffee cup readings.
Oh, yes.
Now, that must be the coffee grounds that are like tea leaves or something.
Yeah, my mother used to do it. My mother's friends. You drink Turkish coffee, or Arabs call it Arabic coffee. The Armenians call it Armenian coffee. The Greeks call it Greek coffee.
Well, I just wonder, you know, because I usually just see on those coffees.
You have to
those
turn
coffees.
The cup over, turn it around once.
Okay, there's a way to, because normally you just see a sludge at the bottom, but
no,
it's not
no,
a picture.
No, 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 you turn the cup over, you rotate it once, and let it settle for a little bit, and then the person turns it over.
So there's that
and
human
reads
element.
Reads all sorts of things in there.
Fascinating. Okay.
Something about the drummers, which are the first show tonight, 5:30 to 6, South End Drummers. They're kids. They're children.
Okay.
The drummers and singers are with the Maple School Drummers, opened the 2006 Arab International Festival. The local band has been a favorite in years past. And here, there's a picture of them, and as you have, and
beautiful.
I have.
Yeah.
So that's how it begins. There's one other thing about that.
Go ahead.
A list of the activities, which is interesting. Musical acts, both local and international. A giant old-fashioned Ferris wheel that overlooks Dearborn.
Right. Yep.
30 international food booths. The coffee reading, as you indicated, children's tent, Arab merchandise, arts and craft, artisans, henna tattoos. That's really interesting. You know what henna?
Well,
henna is a red dye
that
the Arabs decorate their with patterns on their hands, and also the Armenians do it. Usually, when you're going to just before the bride gets married, they have a henna party where people dip their fingers in henna. So this is not, because in the Arabic culture, tattooing is prohibited permanently. So these are temporary.
Yeah. Well, the Armenian culture, of course, has been part of the Middle Eastern cultures, as you know, as you've been featuring on your show for decades. This is a big event, folks. If you've never gone over there, not only the Arab American Community Chamber of Commerce, but Access, the Ford Motor Company, City of Dearborn, many other corporate sponsors, AT&T, Comerica, Chrysler, oh my gosh, so many listed there. So all 3 days this weekend. There's a little bit of rain forecast for tomorrow, but hey, get your umbrella and just go out there. Usually over 300,000 people are attracted, and it's worth it. And it's all free, of course, unless you buy some food or some arts and crafts, too.
But I want to get my worry beads. I saw that one ad, the advertisement of the guy selling worry beads. I went to Beirut once and tried to buy them, and I never got around to doing it. So,
Where is that? The separate
brochure?
Did you have an insert on the festival?
I thought we read all those, and...
What I'm looking for here is
there something of
the trolleys and the
you're talking about whether
here it is, free shuttle service every 15 minutes from Davenport University, which is located at Michigan Avenue and Oakman Boulevard. So it's a little bit south of Michigan Avenue at Oakman. The Davenport University, in fact, they're moving. They're selling that facility, so they're not even open there anymore.
It used to be part of the HFCC.
No, never was.
Years ago, wasn't it?
No, it was the Dearborn College of Business originally.
I thought when
I went
to
school, they changed their name.
The chemistry department, the science
building. We had an east campus.
Right.
Yes, we did, but it wasn't in this location. So this is Michigan Avenue at Oakman, and a big parking lot there, so it's easy to see, and they still got the Davenport University signs up. And so that's free shuttle service every 15 minutes. And
is that the only one?
Yeah, it's the only one that's listed, and believe me, it's a big parking lot, and that's a good location to head for, because people know that they have to walk for blocks and blocks and blocks to get into this big festival. There's no
And the Michigan Avenue close bus
parking.
Will get you to
yes,
there.
This parking will take you right in and drop you off in the center for free, this shuttle. So head for that Davenport University location,
that's
folks.
The interesting
Unless thing. You're living in the East End anyway and you just want to walk up there or bike in with your bicycle or whatever. Yeah, and free. They do a lot of that. So today and pretty much all day Saturday, Sunday to 8 p.m., go on down and be part of that. Look for the big Ferris wheel, because that's been an icon there of this festival for quite a few years now.
And you want to get near the stage where all the acts are taking place.
And I think you indicated there's more than one stage?
No, there's one. Every
one
time
big
I've
stage
been,
anyway.
There's one main
okay.
stage,
right.
and then
okay.
all the restaurants are open. I don't know if the prices are reduced for the festival and the restaurants.
Well, that's
that
right.
Line.
They're right there, too. Sure. I'm sure they would
I don't know
be.
If they okay. run specials.
We have 8 minutes remaining before WHFR moves out of public affairs into the...
Well, I'd like to talk about that most important thing that involves us all, which has to do with the oil price.
I've heard about that. Tell us, Ned. What's,
well, what we're going to read from Mr. Bewick's newspaper, the Sunday Times, the date June 15th. You might want to get this because it's very important. It is a guest editorial from a person named Dale McFeathers, Scripps Howard News Service. And Dale says, so what's a reasonable windfall? A bad bill founded on a bad idea died in Congress when Senate Democrats could get only 51 of the 60 votes they needed to proceed on a windfall profit tax on big oil. By the way, there aren't any more than 51 Democrats in the Senate. A punitive tax makes for bad tax policy. That's how we got the pernicious alternative minimum tax. The Congress passed the tax in 1969 in response to public outcry over the disclosure that 155 wealthy households had legally paid little or no tax. Now the AMT threatens to ensnare an ever-growing number of middle-income taxpayers, and the windfall tax was purely punitive, 25% tax on profits that are unreasonable, whatever that is. The five biggest oil companies are hardly objects of public sympathy, with gasoline at $4 a gallon, oil at over $130 a barrel, and first quarter profits of $36 billion. But contrary to intimidations from some of the lawmakers, the tax will have done nothing to reduce the price or increase the supply of gas. And at worst, like an earlier windfall profits tax, it could prove a disincentive for increasing domestic output. The oil companies might fairly ask, where was Congress when oil prices was dragging along at close to their historic average of $22 a barrel? The bill would also have repealed $17 billion in industry tax breaks. Listen to that. Which is fine if they're not being used for what they're supposed to, like building new refineries, which they don't. But the money would have been diverted to the alternative energy sources like wind and solar, which only nibble at the margins of the supply problem. Also in the bill were some useful steps in regulating and investigating the trade in oil futures. The entry of huge speculative hedge funds into the oil market is certainly cause for inquiry.
What are we going to do?
Unfortunately, I have to cough. We need only recall when Enron was ruthlessly driving up electricity prices in California, and it later turned out the only thing wrong with the supply of electricity in the state was Enron itself. The Enron loophole is what it's called that has to be changed into this energy situation. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now it's time for my comments about that. And this whole, you know, it's a big topic of discussion. Should we, you know, pass a law regulating or forcing oil companies to do something? And yeah, we should probably do some of that. Should we, but it won't have very much immediate effect. And even the drilling offshore, once we get that going, it's going to take years or up in Alaska. And I think it's really disingenuous. It's really nasty. It's really sneaky when they start calling the Alaskan Nature and Wildlife Reserve ANWR. That's all on the media now. They have dropped speaking all those words, and they say, and when they say, "Let's
the acronym is what's important."
ANWR. Yeah, let's drill in ANWR because it doesn't sound like it's America. In fact, isn't there a country, or at least a city in the Middle East, that's ANWR, N-A-N-W-A-R?
I don't.
Well, yes, it is. There is some Arab country city that is called Anwar. And I thought it was, okay, let's drill the heck out of Anwar because they're not here in America. But it turns out it's the Alaska Nature and Wildlife Reserve, folks. And I know it's very, very far north, but it's not going to help us out. I mean, we use 1/4 of all the oil produced in the world, and we're only 3% of the population. We have almost no production in the U.S., and as Ned mentioned in that article, there's a lot of land and preserves that's already been given, leased and given to the oil companies.
68 million acres
that
in the United States.
That they haven't drilled on yet, folks, and there's oil underneath there. What's holding them back? Oh, they just want to keep it in their pocket so they can make money in the future.
Well, if they can get the oil leases in the...
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Gulf, and sure. Still have Let, them.
Right. Let's get all you can, and you'll be making profits and even more billions. So I do think they're not operating for the good of this country, and maybe our government can get them straight on that. However, the answer that we're all forgetting, and even our government, our leaders are afraid to say, but Jimmy Carter was brave enough to say it 30 years ago, although I know, what did he do after that? Well, we didn't elect him again, folks. That's why he didn't have a chance to do anything. Nobody believed him. He was scaring us, you know, with the need to conserve. The four-letter word, the four-syllable word is conservation. We do need to use less gas. We do need to show these people we're not going to buy it at these prices and that we do have other choices. Now, our government needs to encourage people to give us even more choices. You know, electric-powered cars, solar cars, cars that do. If we got to force the manufacturers to give us better gas economy, by golly, they know how to do it. And they say, well, people won't buy it. We will buy it now that we see what the prices of gas are. Of course we will. Shame on GM, shame on Ford, shame on Chrysler, and all the other manufacturers that haven't given us more fuel-efficient vehicles sooner. This was coming. Oil is a finite quantity. After it's gone, it is gone. Yes, we can make oil, gasoline out of coal, but you don't want to have to pay the price of that, folks.
At these prices, you like can it. Do it.
Yeah, I don't know, but I think it still costs more if they, you know, made gasoline out of coal.
Here's a fact that I learned recently. I watched... And if you just took the issue of demand, India, China, oil shouldn't be more than $70 the barrel. The difference, the other $60, is in speculation.
Yes. That
so conserving wouldn't solve the problem. It's in which conserving is important, but that difference between double the price is in allowing hedge funds and banks to speculate in oil futures.
Ned is a businessman as well as a erstwhile politician, and he is right. Things are much more complicated. Even if you trust Anderson Cooper or a few other TV hosts that had commentators last night on, even more recently, we can't explain it all, folks. But there are forces at work here that normal supply and demand don't affect it. That speculators, especially ones based in London, England, that are sort of outside the control of our own government, are raising these prices way up now that there is the demand, and it's astronomical. So our answer has to be the best choices personally to conserve the use of these things, find alternative transportation, whether it's biking, walking, oh my gosh, taking the buses in Detroit or demanding our local politicians improve local transit options for us, that is the best answer. If we can conserve just a little, one day a week, find an alternative way to get to work or carpool with somebody else, it would make a tremendous impact, but we all have to do it. So we know you're going to do your part. We got to stir things up by actually leaving you to your thoughts here now and make room for Highway 61, the Blues Show with Joanne Korchinska. Thank you, Ned Apigian, for being with
me
today.
Always my pleasure. We always